And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Freedoms Phoenix. That one sucked. All right. Well, hopefully we'll do better next time. All right. Angela Keaton, antiwar.com. I just know she had
an idea. You don't even know, Ernie.
I don't even know
where I'm going with this.
I don't even know. It's making it so exciting. Okay.
Angela, I'm blowing everyone out of the water.
All right. So blow me. So, go ahead.
First, I'm going to start with what's good. What's good about libertarianism is antiwar.com. That's a good thing.
Good.
LRN.FM, which should be called the Peace News Network.
Good.
It's an amazing thing. Free State Project, which will eventually be the largest concentration of anti-war activists anywhere.
Definitely unbad.
Yep. Students for Liberty Youth. There's some good kids.
Yeah, you know, the infrastructure is being created. Angela and I have been doing this for a long time. We've known each other, and we are in a much better infrastructure. A lot of people, boots on the ground, than we ever have been. So what's the problem?
Okay, what's the problem? All right. You know, I got to school the libertarians all the time, and usually, you know, where I am now is where the rest of the libertarian movement will be in 10 years. That certainly was the case with the Libertarian Party. Now all the Students for Liberty kids who are, you know, from the Cato bunch, I can understand why the elders of Cato don't like me. They resent me because all their youth sound the way I did when everyone says, oh, my God, we can't sound that crazy and that out there. But that's where libertarianism is now. It's much more radical. It's much stronger. We kind of taken it back to really where Carl Hess and Murray Rothbard are during their very left period.
They just see a whole bunch of Rothbard and Angela Keaton and Ernie's and all the kind. We've been screaming this for freaking decades. You and I, and I'm telling you, the same stuff, like you just saying, that we've been going on about, all of a sudden is now mainstream, and we got Republican candidates up there saying how libertarian they are.
It's gone true. But I gotta correct some of my, you know, well, I was going to say libertarian brothers and sisters, but it's really my libertarian brothers. It's a lot of the elders of the movement, because they can be a little slow sometimes in the connection. So it's time for me to drop a little history bomb on everyone.
Go.
All right. I've noticed, all right, and this is not even like, you know, this is not even a trend. It's really out there. We've got another wave of anti-political correctness running through the libertarian movement again. And people are into anti-feminism and some other things. Now, look, I'm not a thick libertarian. If, you know, anti-feminism is your thing, if being against this racial group, that thing is your thing, whatever. You don't want to eat GMOs, you want to have a tinfoil hat, you want to use human waste to fuel your house, whatever. That's none of my business, and it's not essential to libertarianism. They're all preferences. Just like I have preferences, you know, we all have preferences. I'm not here to push anyone's preferences, but I do look at trends and I look at the significance of things. Now, back in the 90s, which I realize is a million years ago, but still very real, libertarianism made a strategic and tactical, both horrible error, by aligning with neoconservatives on something called the anti-PC movement. In the late 80s and early 90s, the universities were having, going through a period where they moved, into deconstructionism, postmodernism, speech codes, and these things were all kind of thrown together in one pot, one pile of things. And there was, what was called political correctness, which people confuse with, people confuse being anti-PC with being pro-free speech. They are not the same. They are lumped together for a reason, and it's very deceptive.
No, I saw it coming in the late 70s when we were in high school. It was that Title IX debate. It was all about we're going to include, and you could see it was a central plan from on high of how we're going to use language and change the city count. I mean, the student council bylaws of the principles of kind of, I could feel it coming in the late 70s, and it just kept progressing. So this was a concentrated effort by whom for what?
Well, okay, Title IX, here's the thing. Libertarians can obsess about all they want, but the fact is, what the hell are libertarians doing worrying about specifics of public school policy when we know those are government indoctrination centers to make you good citizens of the empire, to make you love American exceptionalism, to make you love colonialism, and to sign your kids up for war?
Yep.
That's what it does. It's God bless America, hand over your heart. Whether it's, you know, whether they teach women to want to be at home or whether they teach women to want to, you know, want to love and want to suit up and go kill foreigners, there's nothing there that's for us in either direction. There's no benefits to it. There's never been any benefit to us. But you're right, though, about the language. But here's the thing. We assume that anti-political correctness is the same thing as being pro-free speech. And libertarians aligned in the late 80s or early 90s with neoconservatives who are ultimately our mortal enemies in political history. Progressivism and, you know, state liberalism are really blips. There's only two ideologies that mattered in the 20th and now 21st century, and that's neoconservatism, which is all conservatism. That was William Buckley's doing. It goes all the way back to Leo Strauss. Those philosophies are all conservatism now. Now you have nationalists and so on, but the cheerings, you know, but what you think of as conservatism is all neoconservatism. And I've had, you know, a school, Jeffrey Tucker and others on this when they go, you know, they want to praise William Buckley or something, because that's nonsense. Let's go way back. William F. Buckley took National Review, and what he did, and they try to make it as though he cleaned it up by throwing out the Birchers, but who did he actually purge? He purged Ayn Rand and Murray Rothbard out of the conservative Garden of Eden and totally destroyed it and replaced it with people like Irving Kristol and Norman Podhoretz, who have an entirely opposed view of what libertarians do about what the world is. Neoconservatives, and whether you think of them as ex-Trotskyites or not, they have a very, very strict view of what the world should look like, and they want to conform people to that view of the world. It is not a freedom view of the world in any way, shape, or form. Remember, Irving Kristol wrote, you know, two cheers for capitalism, because these people have always been suspicious of markets, and they've always been suspicious, ultimately, of freedom. And libertarians buy a lot of nonsense all the time, including, you know, latching on to Fred Meyer's fusionism of libertarianism and conservatism. This is, you know, a very popular idea in the 50s, which is nonsense. Fusionism in no way benefits the libertarian movement. But Buckley is entirely responsible for Leo Strauss, and that became, you know, the North American form of Euro-nationalist supremacy, now known as neoconservatism. The Straussians took over the editorial staffs of National Review and Commentary and still today. And because of that, the U.S. has now been beholden to what is basically a racist, genocidal foreign policy. Neoconservative is racism, Ernie. It's colonialism, and it's the endless financially and morally bankrupting empire. They are the reasons why our dollar is destroyed. They are the ones that destroyed the economy. They're the ones who've destroyed American ideas and philosophy, if there was really anything ever there to conserve. So aligning with neoconservatives in any way, even for what appeared to be, and this is very deceptive, free speech efforts, when in fact they were anti-political correctness efforts, and there's a reason why these two ideas have been conflated and put together and made to seem like that they're the exact same thing when they're clearly not.
Okay, now this is, you know, for the audience, we're going to go into break here in a second, and I want the audience just to know about this one. It was called The Best of Enemies or Frenemies or something like that. And it was all about 1968 at the Republican and the Chicago Democratic conventions. The coverage of ABC was 90-minute coverage instead of this gavel-to-gavel thing in prime time. And it was debates between Buckley and Gore Vidal. And Gore represented the hedonistic, I mean, he was upper crust and kind of used big, you know, words like Buckley did, but he represented, yeah, so you want to be gay and do, and kind of a lot of the stuff, you know, the social advocacies of freedom and so on that they were doing, and he saw that Buckley represented this moral Christian, we're going to rule you with the elitist mentality of we know better than you, we are smarter than you, and we're going to tell you how you should and should not live. Gore was the other side of no, you don't get to tell me, and that was the foundation of this new conservative Buckley thing, was we have the right to rule.
This is Donna Hancock with...
How far off am I?
That's really good. I'm glad you got Gore Vidal in there.
Well, this is... I just saw this documentary like a couple weeks ago, you know, on my Netflix of We Know Your Brain and You Want to Watch This or something. And so I saw, I go, yeah, that might be interesting, worth it. And I watched it and I'm going, oh, ho, 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 ho. I see what's going on. This has been... And it's because we had the collective ability to everybody, 40 million people at a time is watching some television program of I Gotcha, and there's, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and that's all you got. Well, now they couldn't do that. I mean, you know, they just can't because they don't have all the eyeballs and ears the way they did before unless it comes to a really snappy tune that's on iTunes or something. So I'm going, this is the battle, the moral battleground that the conservatives claimed under Buckley was around this Christian, God-fearing Judeo outside of a moral platform of which you had to operate from, gave them their validity to tell you how they're going to rule you on a bunch of other stuff.
Because Gore Vidal was part of the WASP ruling elite, he saw right through their nonsense. He saw right through everyone's nonsense, and he was right. I mean, Gore Vidal has been completely right about foreign policy. He was born out to be absolutely correct on empire. By far and away.
Well, see, my thing is, the reason I brought that up is that was a very bright, and it was vindictive. Since then, I mean, it just, you know, Buckley, he didn't get enough. He didn't win enough. He didn't use enough big words. He didn't get, and he was made out to be, you know, whatever everybody, the criticism of him, and Gore just didn't care. He just wanted the opportunity to slap Buckley around. He got to, and Buckley never forgave him. So I'm going, okay, why? What was the foundation? Well, Buckley was making the argument that we have a far superior American exceptionalist. God has granted us the right to rule you and shut up and be ruled. And we're the ones that should be ruling. Gore was more the individual. I get to be a freaking, Neanderthal doing whatever orgy, kiss my ass. And they're like, oh, hell no. That means right there, you don't have the moral ability to rule yourself because you're decadent and you did smoke marijuana. So I'm going, okay. So it became very clear, even in the late 60s, what the battle was. It was battle over the credibility of who gets to rule, yourself or the elite up here. We know better than you. You should listen to us because. And that was the battle between Buckley and Gore. And the same battle has been going on in different versions for freaking ever. And while the freedom oriented aspects have diversified in the, you know, the movement, whatever the hell that is, that you have on the other side, the crystals in them, they keep trying to consolidate power and the moral authority to be my ruler. How far off am I?
That's got some good stuff going on there, man. You've been thinking.
Yeah, no, I get it. I always deal, but you know, all that gets so complex and everybody's all, and I'm going, no, it comes down to leave me aloneism. You know, I just want to be in the leavemealonezone.com, man. I mean, just leave me alone over here. Anybody, there are those that just want to be left alone and those that won't leave me alone. I'm going, who won't leave me alone? You know, the Buckley guys, you know, Gore Vidal is like, they don't want to, they just, but to advocate, they're going, yeah, but then you'll be like gay and do drugs and stuff. And they go, yeah, and your point, yeah, but you'll be like gay and do drugs and stuff. See, that's their only, the conservatives' only argument. So the libertarian movement, you know, I saw as an opportunity, you and I both did, but then they go, yeah, but we might get some more Wall Street money if we start sucking up to the neoconservative kind of thing. How's that working out? This is where you're going.
That's kind of where I want to.
I know. I'm just building up.
Yeah, no.
All right, here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Angela Keaton from AntiWar.com. I think she's just talking to him. Angela Keaton. You know, taking care of business. Oh, here on Declare Your Independence. All right, Angela, skip to the end. I can see, you know, she's... You know, I think she gets, like, surprised that I get it. I just a bumper sticker guy, man. I'm just like, skip to the end, man. There's just like, they, them, those that won't leave me alone. Well, there's all kinds of excuses that they come up with why they won't leave me alone, because we're smarter than you are. We're a leader than you are. We use bigger words than you do. And gosh darn it, people like us, according to the polls at Fox. So I'm just going.
Neoconservatism has never had a grassroots. It just is a movement with a head and no tail. But I want to get, back to you. And I really, you know, I criticize libertarians and libertarianism because I love libertarianism. I grew up as a libertarian. I mean, I've been eating this stuff up since my old man used to, you know, throw copies of The Fountainhead at us. All right. So there's, you know, it's not because I'm a self-loathing libertarian. I love this. But I make sure that we get, you know, it's called fraternal correction, and that's what I do. And I do the history part of it, you know, and because there needs to be some movement historian. It wasn't, you know, a bought property from, you know, the Koch brothers or the Paul family. And I'm an independent person. I don't get paid to talk about history, though I certainly should. I want to make a point. The newsletters, there's always, like, you know, every few years, you know, there'll be some kid, you know, they hire at Cato or at Reason to go off about the horribleness of the newsletters, especially when Ron Paul is. I mean, Ron Paul has gone in his old age very far to the left. If you read Swords into Plowshares, you definitely see where he's going to this, because so much of the Ron Paul youth movement drew from the left. They're, you know, concerned with empire, police brutality, our banking system, which is really, you know, the source of our economic problems. That's and so the old guard in the movement, you know, the people who, you know, the old, you know, the really old craggly people at Reason and at Cato, not the current staff or whatever, but the old men are very upset by this, because they want to, it's a matter of misdirection, deception. They want everyone to forget how far to the right the Cato Institute and Reason Magazine were, along with Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell and the Rothbard-Rockwell part on matters of, you know, aligning with the neoconservatives against political correctness. Once again, not the same thing as free speech, because anti-PC things do dictate speech. It dictates what the acceptable just as much as political correctness does. Anti-PC also dictates what we can talk about. And I try to explain this to people like Walter Block all the time, because most of my time is spent, you know, teaching the elders of the movement how to think properly, because they're so wedded to their teams and their sects that they forget what the actual ideology is. And political, you know, and signs of political correctness. Now we've got these alt-right people in the movement, and we've got the anti-feminists. These are the groups who, you know, you shouldn't be talking about race. You shouldn't be talking about this. You shouldn't be talking about that. First off, no libertarian needs any permission from anyone at Auburn or Cato or whatever to be talking about anything in the movement. Intellectuals speak about all kinds of things. Murray Rothbard certainly did. Carl Hess did. Ayn Rand had opinions on everything. That's what intellectuals do. Now, whether or not something is essential to libertarianism, the use of state force, is a different issue. Two separate things. But this idea that we need hall monitors to decide what it is we can talk about is something fairly destructive.
Okay, now I want to inject this. From my experience, this is what's happened.
Yeah.
Every time that you have somebody's got a advocacy for whatever the heck it is that they're doing, instead of going as individuals, we have the right and the freedom to fill in the blank. It's not about individuals. It's about groups of individuals. Well, you know, libertarian position on the feminist this or the children that or the guy, you know, they keep, you know, getting in the sickness of grouping everybody. And, well, we should have the group right of, you know, and our opinion of it. You know, and that's where I get back to the leave me aloneist, individual of individual. It's all about the individual. And I know you and I agree on this and had these conversations in the history according to how we got to this. You know, Angela have sat down at, you know, a bar of a restaurant of we're sitting there and napkin is full. I still got napkins. You know, so I'm going, I understand. But that's where I see the problem in the Libertarian Party, Libertarian movements, advocacies, campaigns, everything, is they're out there advocating for a plan for a group instead of ever just emphasizing on the individual. And that sickness comes from somewhere.
Well, because there's lots of reasons for that, in part because we haven't evolved. But neoconservatism has links to something called communitarianism, which was also very popular in the 90s. And communitarianism is just what you think it sounds like. It's not communism, but it's a right-wing form of, you know, thinking about the group first. And this is where people like Christopher Lash and others like Etami and Etzoni is an Israeli name that I can't pronounce anymore because I've gotten, my brain's gotten tired here. But, you know, this made its way into National Review and commentary also. But the, you know, that forms of libertarianism, and I'm equally, you know, I'm blaming all of them. You know, it's Rockwell, it's Cato, it's Reason. During the 90s, they all got caught up in the anti-PC movement, and we got linked to the neoconservatives. Now, who really benefits from anti-PC movements? The free speech movement did not benefit from this. Free speech movement has always been something like anti-censorship. I cut my teeth as a really young kid in my teens on anti-censorship and anti-PC movements. I was homeschooled, and so I did a lot of reading. I read Nat Hentoff in the Village Voice all the time, and I wanted to be an ACLU lawyer when I grew up. I didn't understand that, you know, there really aren't very many paid staff positions. But the things I wanted to do were, as a kid, I would see members of ACT UP and members of Operation Rescue, whether or not you agree with ACT UP or Operation Rescue, but I'd see people going to prison for protesting. This is what I saw as a young kid, and I decided that, no, I was, you know, going to be the person who defends that. And that's where I really, you know, got into anti-censorship, in censorship movements. And then by the time I had gotten to college, you know, I was 16. I was very naive in a lot of ways. And I very much was willing to work with neoconservatives on these efforts. Well, that was a huge mistake in so many ways. And then part of those ways were is that it really mutes our anti-war, anti-empire positions. Now go back to Rothbard. What is the key to really, what's the most important things that libertarians can do? And that's fight against mass murder, fight against empire, fight against the expansion of the U.S. everywhere, which has done horrible things on so many levels. I mean, I don't need to repeat this because anyone listening to the show gets instinctively why that's a horrible thing.
We oppose the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is why we have to really be on guard. So why is it that we're, you know, embracing people like Milo Yiannopoulos from Breitbart? Or why is it that we're reviving Christina Hoff Sommer's career again for the 14th time? I mean, you know, she did this thing, you know, the new feminism back in the 90s where, you know, it was adorable that we all be called girls. And, you know, really what it was anti-feminist. Now, she doesn't consider herself an anti-feminist, and I think she's sincere about that. But it's this kind of feminism where we're all supposed to sit down and you know, take a seat to men. And I don't give a damn. I really don't. I don't sit down and take a seat to anyone. I don't give a damn what your gender, race, religion, or was. I'm an individual, and I have every damn right to speak. So I don't really give a damn, and I certainly am not going to be told not to speak in my interest. For example, you know, when a woman speaks out in liberty, and this happens in any social networking, she's called an angry feminist. And we see the same nonsense where, and I do not understand these libertarians at all who have such a bug up their rear about Black Lives Matter. I hate cops. Black Lives Matter hates cops. That's a damn good thing.
And we come back. More Angela Keaton! What I want to do is we've got two more segments, half the show to go, and skip to the end of what. Okay, let me guess. You're going to we got the Libertarian National Convention coming up in May, and you're going to, you know, explain it to them in one way or another of do something. Am I correct?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be in Orlando. I haven't been back since I resigned from the LNC, but I am, and this is going to be an interesting homecoming because it's going to upset a lot of people, but I'm going to be keynoting the Libertarian Party of California's convention here in LA in April, and that was the same, you know, group, you know, obviously it's a totally changed regime, but that was the old guard who did nothing but haunt me, call me names, sexually harass me, make horrible, horrible comments about every aspect of my identity, threatened to sue me, all because I was a bisexual woman who...
That had nothing to do with it. It was all because you were leaking out what was really going on.
Well, because I was against the Iraq War. But they made the issues, all aspects of my identity. You remember, they had a 24... You know, the Libertarian National Committee... They put me up on a 24-count charge of a Stalin. You know, they had the Stalinist show trial. 24 charges of disloyalty against the party.
I know. Right there, that tells you everything you know.
Now, you know, all these people like, you know, Bill Redpath and Jim Lark, what happened to their careers? No one respects them anymore. The party, you know, the state parties revolted when they did that to me. And they had, you know, it's you know, because I stood up to, you know, what it represented. I'm not anti-Bob Barr or Wayne Root as human beings. I was anti what they represented. And I've long since made peace with Wayne. He means well. He just didn't, he and I are just an entirely different field. And
now we ran a guy. We were on the planes together during the 10, you know, national chair race. I mean, I'm going, Wayne would go like this. He goes, at Searchlight in Nevada, where they had the big first Tea Party Sarah Palin thing that he spoke at, and I was somewhere else, but we had made a bunch of these, you know, Love Not War. You remember we had the T-shirts and Wayne Allen Root and little, you know, and he goes, well, nobody knew that was, I go, you did. I go, that was all for you, man. We put up hundreds of signs just so you knew. It's all about you. I go, we're not, there's not animosity here. It's to understand where the real power of the libertarian movement is. And they don't know. And they keep demonstrating that over and over. So I'm, when we come back, I want to get to where, how you're going to have an influence on these guys, because what are they looking at? They're looking at one, this, the next election cycle. It's all going to be different. Well, here's Gary Johnson and what's his face? McAfee. McAfee and whoever else comes in, you know, Daryl Perry, everybody. They're going to come in and they're going to say, see, we're on the stage now. See, we're going to do it. See, how can we sprint and run and be relevant to what they perceive to be the low-hanging fruit of the Republican, conservative, and whatever the hell that they're doing, instead of running to libertarianism that you and I have been advocating all this time as a big, giant, oh my God, move forward, regardless of what the vote totals are. They don't see that. Are those people still there? Are they being replaced? Are they irrelevant? What's the machine and the delegate count of the state by state? You're going to do California. They came to me. Hell, I've been asked by these guys. They went, oh, yeah, Ernie, we need you to run for president. Dude, come now. Hell no. I mean, they came here and just hard pressed me. Dan, what's his name? But I'm just going, no, I no. So I'm, if Angela's doing something, then I'm interested. You know, how can I help? I need to know exactly what it is that you're advocating.
Well, I'm going to talk about all that.
I know. And then we're right back. Here we go. It's time to do it. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Libertarian heart, knowing that she knows, and she's taking the time. I gotta get that riff in there. Okay, so she's taking the time to explain stuff to me. You know, over the year, I'm going, what is that? Who is the coalition of this and kind of versus and kind of, not that I cared. And I remember asking her a few years ago. We were in New Hampshire at a thing, and I go, Ange, you got to help me out here. There is all this like heat lightning above the clouds. There's all these, you know, you see these lightning bolts above the, you know, it's kind of a low overcast and you can see the battle up. And I'm going, you know, the gods be a fighting up there, or somebody thinks that they rule and kind of, and I'm down here and I don't care. I go, should I peek my head above the cloud line, see what's going on? Does it matter? And she goes, no. So we're going to peek our head up a little bit. What are we doing, Angela?
Well, you know, the Libertarian Party on the national level has changed significantly, and I think, one, having really young, talented leadership like Nick Sarwark has made a difference, and having people like Wes Benedict and others come in and really, I mean, the Libertarian Party, in many ways, at the national level, is libertarian again. Now, that doesn't mean I want to go back out there and get back involved. I think, you know, that's something I did when I was young, and that was great. But I'm in a different place in my life now. I mean, I'm not, and also, too, I work for antiwar.com. We're a 501c3. We don't endorse candidates, and I don't even tell people to vote. If they want to do that, do it. Knock yourself out. I don't go into a voting booth. You know, I'd rather spend my time getting a pedicure or something than the time it takes to vote. It's much more valuable to me than voting would be. But it's, you know, so I'm not, you know, I'm not condemning the National Party. I think they've got some wonderful things. But, you know, they're going to pick somebody to be the standard bearer. And I just currently, you know, other than somebody who's really too down to earth to be, you know, who makes too much sense and too normal to be the standard bearer, someone like Daryl Perry, for example, who's just, you know, a normal, peace-loving human being who lives life freely, those kind of people don't get nominated. You know, we're going to get somebody like Gary Johnson, and, you know, God bless him. I'm sure, you know, he has good intentions, but he has no libertarian instincts. Intellectually speaking, he has difficulty.
Just a little bit of a tax, kind of a smaller kind of, we won't be as butthead tax.
He just, you know, Gary Johnson's a smart man in certain areas, but he does not have the intellectual capacity to take abstract libertarian ideas and apply them to issues to know what the libertarian outcome is.
Because he's a politician. I mean, I like Gary. You know, Gary's been on the show several times. We've even done fundraisers for him. We helped him. I go, look, you're going to do a fundraiser, but you'll get used to it. You're going to have some Ron Paul Levolution t-shirts around. And he's like, yeah, he's cool. So Gary and I get along fine. But at the beginning of this campaign season, even before he announced and stuff, he comes on. It's just, wow, to get the votes and the kind of, we need a little bit of a government of a government. And I'm just, you know, he's not really libertarian. And then had McAfee on.
He's smart and good and, you know, can do something. He's talented. You know, he's athletic. I mean, he's got good things going for him as a human being. That's, you know, people get these things confused. Oh, my God, if you're saying something bad, like you're condemning somebody. I mean, yeah, it just, you know, you can see wonderful qualities in a human being and also see that this person is not really right to be a libertarian leader. And I mean, I'm using leader in a sense. You obviously,
yeah, I just don't want these people to think they got the right to rule me, even though they got a better idea. They got a plan. I don't care what your central libertarian plan is. It's still a central plan. So what is your advocacy right now? Skip to the end. I mean, you're looking at, you got opportunities, this election cycle, the war, we're going into the third nuclear of, oh my God, you know? So I'm like, Angela's got a plan for me. Help me out. What's up?
Plan is that we need to get people, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, Raimondo moves his butt a little bit on this. There's going to be a Rothbard, you know, a compendium of Murray Rothbard's leftist period from the 60s, I think, coming out in Mises sometimes, do some of that this year. But really, is to take, you know, is to look at our historical documents, look at pure, you know, look at Rothbard and look at Hess from those periods. And also, too, revitalize Ayn Rand without, you know, bringing in the organized objectivism. Forget, I don't need Peikoff or David Kelly or Yaron Brooks or these people to interpret Ayn Rand's words for me. It's like, it's, you know, let's go back to a fundamentalist interpretation of Ayn Rand. Look at the texts, not so much her crazy opinions on whether she felt this way or that way about Arabs, about her feelings so much, but her actual thoughts on the way to think about the world. Let's get back to basics, strip it down. What is libertarianism? Look at the Carl Hess quotes. Libertarianism doesn't tell you how to live, only that you can. That's it.
You know, I the best description I got in the night, good friends of mine, they go, libertarianism is a means, not an end. If you use a non-aggression principle, kind of everything else falls in line. And the thing is, it goes, the goal is freedom. The goal, the mechanism by which you earn freedom is you don't aggress against your neighbors. You don't allow, you advocate for, you do. It's leave me aloneism. And the goal is left to the individual. When somebody comes up and they got the end goal and I got a plan and this is what we're all going to do, I don't need you to do that for me. All I want is a foundation and a framework by which I can pursue my own happiness as long as I'm not bothering anybody else. This concept, the golden rule, the non-aggression principle, the ability to advocate for myself and not collectivism and individual, all this stuff has been thought out throughout the millennia and has always rose its head above all the crap. It's when people try to collectively tell you how you're going to be free. I don't want them to tell me what I'm going to do with my freedom. That's an individual choice. And as soon as we get to that understanding that I get to pursue my own happiness, as long as it doesn't bother you, then we're good. How do we advocate for that? What's coming? What are you talking about?
Well, one of the things is, though, in liberty, you know, even the smartest people in the movement get caught up in these waves. They're always looking for a movement without masters and gods. It's like we're always looking for masters and gods. And we do this, for example, Ron and Carol Paul at one time had intimate marital relationship. And in that intimacy, they created a child. And for some reason, we act like the child came down from the heavens to teach us something. Rand Paul, you know, whatever, he's a glorified frat boy. But everyone gets themselves all worked up and like, you know, oh my God, this man is going to do so much for libertarianism. He's going to change this.
Not everyone.
Rand Paul's last name was Smith. You would never, ever, ever think about anything he does. Occasionally, you're like, oh, I guess this guy with the weird hair is pretty good on drones. and you'd clap for him just the way you do when Ron Wyden does something correctly or Walter Jones or any number of nice people who occasionally end up in office. But we need to stop, you know, deifying people that, you know, first of all, haven't proven their value to the libertarian movement. Rand Paul had never proven his value to the movement. I had, you know, when I was a teenager, there was all these older guys that I was running around with in the punk rock scene who were the college libertarians. And, you know, we're all still in touch. And I, you know, we talk, and like, he says, well, you know, deep down, you know, we've known Rand for years. Deep down, he has good instincts. Really? Show me an example where Rand Paul has shown the instincts. Because I'm just picking on Rand. But, you know, see the same thing with, you know, libertarians trying to get their, you know.
Oh, no. I had the hardcore press, Ernie. How come you're not getting him, Rand? Did you know the secret coming in the hill? Did it explain to you the secret? We got a secret. And I'm like,
oh, yeah,
you know, unless the secret is he's going to say it from the debate podium, I don't give a crap what the secret is. Why would I want him up there if he ain't saying it? And he goes, he's really an anarchist. He's really one about it. He's really, I go, that makes it worse. If he knows that he's not saying it, then get the hell out, get him off the stage.
Exactly. And, you know, all these libertarians getting, you know, their panties all wet over Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. And, you know, Scott Horton, you know, Scott, I was doing a little collaboration this morning in chat and saying, you know, you know, yes, Donald Trump, you know, did some interesting things this weekend, but he also, too, you know, he also gets into the Israeli first or nonsense and, you know, talks about radical Islam and all this other nonsense that's really, that is in no way, shape, or form good for the anti-war effort. I mean, okay, so he's had a few good moments, but sooner or later, the truth had to occur to somebody that the Iraq War was a bad idea. And, you know, if Donald Trump's only value is in doing that, that's fine. But that doesn't mean we need to get, you know, run around and salute a guy who wants to build a giant wall to keep us all in and keep everyone else out. Enough with this. And, you know, too many libertarians who know better, you know, they fall for this every single time. They have no nuance. Libertarians really do lack intellectual nuance at some level where they can't talk about things. So anyway.
Yep. So Angela's going to do something. She's going to tell us in the next segment. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I'm telling you something.
Damn it. All right. More. Angela Keaton, AnnaWare.com. When we come back just a little bit. All right. One more segment. Skip to the freaking end.
All right.
One thing that you should know, a lot of the efforts that we're doing, I go to Anarchapoco, and then we go speak in Marrakesh, Morocco, for a thing in May. And we're having a lot of contacts through various different peoples throughout North Africa, Central Africa, and Europe. And we're kind of opening up a lot of things in the Pacific Rim, too. So I'm going, and Central and South America. I mean, you know, Freedom's, I've been, you know, making a lot of contacts, doing a lot of stuff. This is what's happening. The next newspaper that we do that we're taking deadline by the end of April, because the newspaper is going to be about all of these different efforts worldwide, how the Levolution has expanded and this libertarianism of take on the planet and the next generation is all over different countries in Europe, and we're doing this and that, and people with resources and money and festivals and all this crap. Here we go. That's going to be put, and authors, and of course, I invite you to participate in this new libertarian uprising of the world, and what you guys do here doesn't freaking matter because you're wasting time and you get with the program, people are going plaid past you anyway. That newspaper is going to be produced in the first week of May, and I've already worked with Ruth or whatever, that's doing the convention bags at the Libertarian National Convention this May. So it's going, 1,000 copies are going to go in all the convention bags. So if you want to have a say, this would be the issue that you would want to make sure we get for an article that goes into that, along with all these international guys from around the world advocating what they're doing for hardcore, no compromise freedom. And in the U.S., you guys suck because you're pussies. Okay. So in a nice way. But the so that's what this newspaper is going to be about. And it's already contracted to be in the convention bag. Do you wish to take advantage of that opportunity?
Oh yes. If I can get an email from one of y'all about what it is, you know, you're looking for in terms of, you know, the, you know,
future and international. It's Generation Next around the world. And what we're doing is that, you know, there's all these different groups. I can go on and on and on about these different projects. You know, I mean, you know, we've done a lot of things like we did with Tahrir Square and, you know, the Arab translation of in 49 languages and, you know, in the, you know, gun rights in Europe after the Paris of, we got attorneys in Berlin, Rome, and Madrid offices of, we're rocking and rolling and whatnot. And I'm telling you, this is what I wanted to demonstrate. I'm going, look, Libertarian Party, United States of America, I don't need to go. Here's the newspaper from Freedom's Phoenix, put in the convention bag, waiting on you now. We're over here, the entire world, and what the hell are you guys doing? Okay. All right, here we go.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to the club! You're in tennis with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. I am from the BEAUT Film Studios, up Freedom's in the Nash, Freedom's Phoenix. Doc, okay, that's better than most. All right, whatever. Angela Keaton, last segment. She's got a plan. Hopefully, it's not a central plan, but you know, it's a plan for individuals if we have a plan to kind of something. Because I mean, damn, if it's not getting bad, the everything that libertarians have been going, this is going to happen. This too shall pass. This is where it's going to go. It's all going to come down to decentralization of money, of ones and zeros. Of, we just did the last hour talking to Peter Todd about, you know, the decentralized internet and Bitcoin and how, you know, this, all these are just examples, symptoms of a big giant problem that the individuals and people are finding a solution to. And any organization or group or ideology or anything that doesn't recognize that this is going down to the power of the individual, democratize information, just like the creation of the printing press or the internet or space travel that's cheap, or I got graphene carbon nanotube if I get to have my own freaking $14 submarine and I wrap myself in Marianne Trench and come get me. I mean, this is happening right freaking not later. And in fact, this is what my presentation is going to be at Anarchapoco. Last year it was, why I'm so optimistic. You just go, why I'm so optimistic, Ernest Hancock, watch the video. And one of my, what's my speech this time? Why I'm still so optimistic. So I understand. Well, Angela, knowing the history and all that, she's like, yeah, there's a something coming and there's something we can take advantage of and we can expand on. And I'm going, okay, skip to the end and tell us everything, Angela Keaton.
This is it. It comes down to this. When you see all these different cultural, you know, people bringing in all their weird cultural baggage and all their side projects, and they're trying to push it as libertarianism, does it, you know, ask yourself one of three questions. How does this roll back the empire? How does this roll back the police state? And how is this a critique of our economic system, which, of course, is not obviously a free market? Those are the three things you need to ask. All the other stuff is not essential. It really isn't. It's kind of irrelevant. You know, what kind of lifestyles people have, whether they live in a city or do this or do that.
Don't care.
What the hell does it have to do with the basics? And people don't ask themselves these questions enough. And this is why we have all these crazy, this is the centralized planning. Instead of being critical, we're obsessed with plans. There is no plan. I don't want to be part of any plan. I want to be left the hell alone. I want to be able to live my life freely, and I don't want to have to think about what everybody else thinks. And I've got my first article coming out in Center for Stateless Society tomorrow about libertarian feminism and what it means to me. And I'm not interested in whether people want to be feminist, not feminist. I don't give a damn. I don't have to answer to anybody. I'm my own damn boss.
You know, this is, I've said this before, and I'm sure you and I have had this kind of, I want to, you know, inject it here. Whenever we run for, I've run for Congress three times, U.S. Senate, Secretary of State twice, state legislature, county, I mean, I'm always out there going, woohoo, I might even do a write-in campaign this time if I want to just get a bunch of signs up. I mean, I'll do something just, you know, because I can. The problem is when you go to these forums and everything, you'll get the Republican, get up there, I got a plan, it's my plan for you to vote for my plan. Democrat, of course, has got their plan, his plan sucks, vote for my plan. You're Libertarian, you get up there and I go, sure, let me tell you what my plan is. You get to have your own plan. How about that? I mean, my plan is you get to have your own plan as long as it doesn't mess with anybody else's plan. What? Oh, my goodness. We need somebody to tell us what to do. What is your plan? You know, so I'm that right there. Once you start getting people, and who does that resonate with? The one kid that's 15, 16 years old that his mom or dad made him come to this one, and he's like, and I go, I'm talking to you. That one guy, look for the young guy. I go, you, right there, you. Got a plan? You want to have your own plan? Love to bother your plan? Hell yeah. That appeals to an entire generation next that knows what they want to do for themselves. Because if you don't figure it out, somebody else will figure it out for you. That advocacy is enormously popular. but it's never advocated by anyone other than the libertarians of pure philosophy like Angela Keaton. And the reason is because, I don't know, they got to get some special interest, enough money, or, you know, somebody will funnel in $10,000 to take over the entire party because they can. And I'm going, all right, that's being missed out on. Why? It is very successful, because the next election cycle, you know, your competition is repeating what you said 2 years ago. They'll never do it because they know how popular it was with the audience previous election cycle. So I'm going, all right, this plan, this advocacy, individual, how are you going to manifest it? What are you going to do? Are you just advocating it for yourself? You're starting to come out in the closet and writing and getting all hardcore? Or is there some movement that you're wanting to tap into or create?
Well, I'm writing, and I'm writing again. I reopened my blog. I wrote a few months ago a very upsetting critique about the role that people like Hans Hermann Hoppe and Tom Palmer, if you don't know those names because you haven't been around a while in the movement, have created, really an element, bringing in racism that completely undermines the anti-war movement. And I really, I used to write for LouRockwell.com, and I had a lot of respect for there's some great people on there, but they've become now hindrances to the anti-war efforts in some ways with all their border issues. And there are a few of the elders at Cato, not the whole thing, and please, people say, they want to, but there's a few people who basically are doing nothing but reading off of the Department of Defense sheet memos or, State Department memos about what it is. For example, bringing Pussy Riot to the International Students for Liberty Conference, and some of these other people that seem a little bit more like spokespeople for soft power, Samantha Power's kind of soft power approach to expanding empire. And I think all we need to do is keep asking the question, how does this roll back empire? How does it roll back the police state? How does this critique our economic system? If it doesn't do that, then someone's pushing some agenda that has nothing to do with libertarianism.
Well, I mean, so what's the power, the burning in your chest of you're going to re-enter the debate and kind of making what? I mean, what is it?
Writing. I mean, there's so many amazing women in the movement, and there's so many at the grassroots level, and there's so many women in this movement that do so many things. But it's time now for there to be women among the people who actually are, quote, I hate this expression, thought leaders, but there needs to be intellectuals again. And we're in that period now where it's time. We can't let, we let people. God bless them. I love Jeffrey Tucker. And the same thing with Justin Raimondo, even though he can be a pain in my neck at times. They're amazing people. But, it's now time for new intellectuals to kind of step forward and do the writing and thinking, and do that in a way that's influential and that revitalizes libertarianism so we don't get caught up in these weird weird tangents that don't necessarily have anything to do with libertarianism. The tangents are great, and that's wonderful, and I love reading, what young libertarians think about Kanye West and everything else. But let's, what are the basics in terms of what we're trying to do to create a free society? And if we don't roll back empire, we don't roll back police state, and we don't have a critique of our centralized economy, then what are we doing here? We're just flapping around here in the wind. It goes back to the old joke about when Libertarian Party's big issue was, the regulation of light bulbs. Yeah, we shouldn't have regulated light bulbs, that's obvious, but, that might not be the best way to focus our entire energy and efforts when we could have been out there protesting the war. The libertarians blew it. We had the chance to take the anti-war movement from the left, which, in so many ways is so good, but, answer rallies weren't the answer. The libertarians needed to be the intellectual leaders of the anti-war effort and make it mainstream and make it broad-based and narrowly focused and bring in normal people in the movement.
Okay, now libertarians, now you're talking anything to do with the Libertarian Party, or is it libertarianism outside? Is it going to something else?
The party's the small, the party's the smallest part.
Smallest.
Well, and that's no disrespect. That's where I came from. I came from the back door. I didn't come in through Institute for Humane Studies. I didn't take any Koch money. The Ron Paul family never helped me. I came in through the bottom. I was a College Libertarians president. That was the organization that predates Students for Liberty and Young Americans for Liberty. I started from the bottom. I was a street protester. So I came in, literally from the street. So I'm, you know, the back door. So when I'm talking about the Libertarian Party, that's a wonderful place, you know, for grassroots activists. But it's just one part of the movement. The movement's a very, very big thing, and it's somewhat amorphous now at this point. You know,
yeah, we called it the Liberty Nexus. It was kind of like everybody went and go, oh, hey, man, it's great to meet you. Let's go do something and get away from this crap. I mean, you know, and the Libertarian movement is much more powerful, more available, more everything than the Libertarian Party. In fact, they're, because of their ballot status, it makes them dangerous to be taken over by some central plan of they're going to rule us another way in the name of libertarianism. That's why the definition of has really kind of evolved to voluntarism, anarchism, leave me aloneism, whatever. That is even, you know, it's libertarianism purity, which they would make fun of. I remember that we used to wear purist badges. You know, this is, all right, we're going to find out, go to the archive, and we'll skip to the end on, you know, what can we do to, you know, emphasize Angela's prose. We can help her. We can get her published in the next newspaper. And we can do a lot of other stuff. You know, we got, oh, somebody should, like, create a webpage that has this kind of stuff you can send to tens of thousands of people. Oh, it's called Freedom's Phoenix. Well, end the radio show. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, or you can do it by yourself. It's like this. I declare my independence. See? No government form. All right. So when are you starting to do your first one that you're doing? Is you're going to approve we can put it up when? Tomorrow?
Yeah, I will send you the link. But yeah, Center for Stateless Society is doing my libertarian feminist piece, which, you know, people can hate it, love it, whatever. It's about experiences of being a woman liberty movement and how screwed up it is.
Well, so, you see on Freedom's Phoenix, we have, original stuff from, on their byline as articles, Bovard and Ivan Elin and Paul Rosenberg and Chuck Baldwin and the Rump. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on, these guys that write regularly for Freedom's Phoenix. There is no reason why I can't take your content, put it up under Angela Keaton Says, and you have your own writer bio page, which you probably already have on Freedom's Phoenix. But
yeah, I wrote a few things back in the day. I wrote something really good, and we can talk about that some more. Is Lynn, did I miss the Lynn Ulbricht segment?
I think she's going to be doing the next she is doing the next one. Is Boston going to be after the first segment? Okay, Boston Tea Party comes for the last three segments of the next hour, and the first segment's going to be Lynn.
All right, I don't want to miss that, so I'm going to get the hell off the line here, and we can definitely talk some more about this, and I would love to...
Donna, send Angela right now an invitation to write an article, the description that you gave all the other guys for the newspaper. And I'll be a reminder for, you know, just keep in mind, this is going to be international, and it's going to all these different, you know, countries around the planet, and then... also the online version of it can be translated. So automatically, I mean, it's caveman talk, but at least you can translate. The other thing is that in Europe, they all speak English anyway. The main thing is that it's future and it's, the youth and it's hardcore international efforts of universal. I'm 13 years old in Bangladesh and leave me aloneism. So, and that, at least a thousand copies are going into all of the convention bags for May's Libertarian National Convention. So with that in mind, that's what she's sending you as a request for an article for then that I need by the end of April.
All right.
And
I can do that.
Preferably early April. I mean, we're going to close it out at the end, so the sooner we can get it to put together for Donna, or she just freaks, you know.
No, I've been writing a lot more lately, and and AngelaKeaton.com is back up. So,
go ahead and put up a link to the story, AngelaKeaton.com. Angela's back, and just put the headline and do it and done. And then of course, link it into the second hour of her being on here. And then the show that you do link to this show for a cross-reference in her article about her page on Freedom's Phoenix. Done. Boom.
All right.
Stay in touch, baby. I'm one of, no, let's do it.
All right, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Angela. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.